Hey,
hello.
How's it?
It's all good in the neighborhood.
Loving it.
So, toxic relationships was your mindful morning meditation.
Sure was.
That was amazing, and I want to talk about it now.
Giddy
with,
up
with the great Joe Trevers.
The great.
The great. For the Motocata.
It sure is. Yeah. Listen, it's a topic, right? The toxic topic.
Yeah.
And it touches so many different things, right? It touches everything that you do. Sorry, that sounds wrong. Not everything you touch is toxic. What I mean is everything that you work with people in, you know, in nutrition and fitness.
And I don't touch everything.
Is exactly right, especially not COVID or anything else. But but certainly, you know, that toxicity is there, no different than it's there in what I do in people's minds, right? So that that level, it doesn't really matter what you're studying or what your field of study or career of choice is when it talks about wellness or health. It doesn't matter if it's, I don't know, epigenetics or whether it's neurology or what it is. Aside from alkali and citric acids, there's very little that's toxic in our lives that's good for us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of it is behavioral and it's like sociological. Mm-hmm. And it's with any toxic relationship or any relationship that tends to falter, a lot of it has to fall on communication and understanding. And one of the biggest things I see as a coach is the lack of understanding of communication between the body and mind. Like there is a communication going on, but it's like a yelling. It's a dictatorship. It's who can have control over the other instead of working kind of synergistically. Mm-hmm. And it's like the food is the tool that's misused because of it. It's really just a symptom. You know, in doing some research and looking at, you know, what some of these psychologists and, you know, what the popular, I guess, attitude is towards this, you know, eating emotionally, you know, you get things like letting food rule your life, vomiting after meals. Like a lot of it is just kind of, it's kind of bullshit really, because, you know, food does need to rule our lives. It's what we need in order to survive, mm-hmm. right? It's one of these things that we would bend space and time in order to have and find and procure both food and water. It allowed us to procreate, mm-hmm. right? If we were not fed properly. But in this day and age, I think, and you've heard me say this multiple times, is we eat for superficial reasons, taste, color, texture, smell, convenience, right. price, and nothing to do with the actual nutrition. And now we're into this whole macronutrition, which is absolutely phenomenal. I think is one of the most important aspects of nutrition, what the value of the food is. But I think we need to also still keep in context the human component of it. And that's where you really shine is, okay, why am I eating? You know, what is my purpose? What am I looking to renovate? What am I looking to do? What am I looking to build? Right. What am I? Right. Right. And people tend to go on one side or the other. They tend to focus on it totally, you know, cognitively or totally physically. So you have these people that are overweight with blood pressure issues and diabetic issues. So chronic health mm-hmm. issues. And then you have people that have, you know, they're built like Adonises, but psychological issues are immense. They're wound tighter than a Swiss timepiece.
Right.
And that tends to make up the North American population right now.
Sure does.
There's no one in the middle, no one in that happy grazing
right.
ground.
And I mean, we're out fighting and pushing money, very well deserved, by the way, pushing money towards, you know, cracking down on meth and meth dealers, but we're not cracking down on dopamine dealers. And so, you know, when we're looking at, you know, I'm at the behest of a narcissist, and when I'm away from the narcissist or in order to try to bring myself back up again, I need that push of dopamine. And so I look for my ice cream or I look for my pizza or I look for, you know, maybe I develop a substance abuse issue. Maybe it's alcohol. And I do that because those short bursts of dopamine, you know, will try to offset some of the narcissism that I'm under at the control of someone else. Right. So that toxic relationship, person to person toxic relationship, right? I mean, there's tons of toxicity, whether we're talking about, you know, some of that food then is also toxic, right? So I go from one to the other. Right. When they say frying pan into the fire, well, that's a toxic relationship that I'm involved in that I don't feel, I don't see enough of my own self-value to be able to pull myself out of it, or don't feel that I have enough self-control and self-ability to pull myself out of it. And so then I turn to, you know, the fire and start eating toxic foods, which then helps, you know, in kind of the growth of my toxic physicality, if you will, and my neurology studies, everything, right?
Yeah.
And so it goes around and around and around, and not unlike an addiction, you know, a substance abuse issue or anything else, it spirals. And of course with dopamine, like anything else, the more often you use it, the less able it is. And so the less effective it is. And so then you look for more and more and more. Right.
Okay. Here's a theory.
Go ahead.
And that self-worth thing that you hit on just a couple seconds ago, I think is massive, but it's when you use food to feel good instead of using food to feel good, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so, it does. Completely.
Like it's how you feel in between your meals. Right. Like it's the need versus the want, right? So if I need you in my life, I'm becoming dependent on you, which means that potentially that is a toxic relationship. But if I want you in my life, then you're there as an equal. You're there. I can survive on my own and you're there because I want you there. And the relationship with food is very similar. The need for nutrition, yes. The need for food, no.
Right.
And that's the difference is we need nutrition. So we eat for purpose, and the bonus is whether or not the food is handsome or smells good or drives a fancy car. You know what I mean? Whereas we're focused on the superficial. So we look for the fancy car and we look for the good looks first.
Yep.
And then, you know, we're finding out that there's no substance, there's no actual nutrition to that relationship. And that's what the body starts.
We're also looking for easy and we're also looking for quick. Right. Which most toxic foods are. They're quick and they're easy as well. Right. Very much like the work that I'm posed, you know, from some people who will say, well, what do you mean I need to be in that program with you for 8 weeks to fix 42 years of programming? Like, what do you know what I mean? Why can't I just do it now? Why can't I take a pill? Why can't I eat the bag of chips you have the candy for more dopamine? Why can't I, you know, take this, you know, narcotic or semi-narcotic or SSRI from my psychologist to get past all of these issues I have that are never going to get dealt with, but I'm going to keep taking them, right? So
it's the big macro portion of our lives that we're not paying attention to. It's the in-between stages, right? It's not the beer or the pizza.
Every once in a while,
Every once in a while. But if someone is fulfilled in their life, then two objects can occupy the same space. So these, you know, people that are fulfilled and are driven for purpose, they tend not to let these things creep in because they're getting their dopamine fixed from other sources.
Right.
What the human body does, and I've explained this in previous podcasts, is it's an adaptive mechanism. So the more you give it, the more it needs. So if we give it this low systemic chronic dopamine, it's going to be absolutely brilliant because it's never going to build up a resistance to it. It's going to appreciate it. But if we get these acute dopamine factors coming in, like if we're not happy, and I'll go back to what you alluded to just a couple of minutes ago in regards to self-image, right? If we can learn to be more positive and have that internal voice, then we don't need other people to validate our self-worth. We're not externalizing it. We're not outsourcing it. And that's it. Like when you're outsourcing your feel good to food, you're feeling good while you're eating it, but then you feel guilty afterwards.
Right.
Whereas the goal is to feel better after your meal and use the meal as a source of feeling good afterwards.
Right. Which you can draw a direct correlation to when we're using other people to validate how we should see ourselves or feel. And so we spend time with those people, and then how do we feel after? We should feel better, but do we? It's a direct correlation. It absolutely is. You can take one field of study and implant another field of study and overlay it completely, and it'll match up, right? It's exactly the same. It's how we view those and what that relationship is with the mechanisms we choose.
Exactly. Like it is, it's almost a parallel line between the two. And industries depend on that, Joe.
Of course. Right?
Dependency, they depend on dependency. We're feeding the machine. We're feeding the industry. We're not feeding our bodies or our minds or our souls. Right. You know, we've got empty relationships. We eat empty calories. And, you know, we're empty in our heads. We're filled with
superficial.
All of this It's you know, the material owns us and not the other way around. And we're so distracted with these exterior circumstances in which we have no control that we've relinquished control to one thing we had.
So social media as an example, just as a quick sidebar to all of this and a sort of a relevance to it, guys like us, and look, for people who want to do it, it's absolutely okay. But for people who choose, let's say, to spend all of their spare time on social media, kind of scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, if that's what they're choosing to do, that's, I guess that's their choice, right? But what is the benefit to it? And then more importantly, how do they feel after the fact? And where do they come from after the fact? Like guys like you and I who are out, you know, doing what we do sort of in the trenches and helping people find their way out of all of this. I mean, we don't spend all of our time scrolling social media. We're on it because it's a necessary evil for us to be able to advertise who we are and what we do for people and to be able to allow people to see that we're here for them. But, you know, after I make a post, and sometimes I don't even make them, sometimes I'll set it, you know, for, you know, even 15 minutes from now. And then once I set it, I'm off again, right? And I'm reading another book, I'm watching another documentary, I'm studying another course, I'm, you know, talking to you or whatever, right? Conferring with a colleague. Yeah. Like these are some of the things we do. And it's not that I don't see social media. Of course I do. I mean, I'll every once in a while dedicate 15 minutes or something and I'm scrolling and I'm seeing something that family and friends are doing and I'm liking it and commenting on it. But what I'm not doing either is I'm not getting caught up in all of the BS that's out there around, you know, which element of politics do I need to start into some sort of an online argument with, or what do I need to feed my mind that is so toxic and negative that I can't even support my own reality after I get off of it? And that again is that other level of toxicity, right?
Right. Use versus abuse. Absolutely. Right. Like you're using, like, you know, it's not even a necessary evil for us, Joe. It's social media is not, and Gary Vaynerchuk talks about this brilliantly. Social media is not the issue. Food isn't the issue. Nope. You've heard me say this repeatedly. It's how we use it. And that line between use and abuse has a lot to do with awareness, right? We use social media. I use my food, and I've learned to use activity, exercise to benefit me, not to, like, I use it to build a better moment, not to escape a moment. I don't eat to escape. I eat to amplify. Yes. I don't exercise to escape or punish. Yes. I use it to celebrate and amplify. Yes. I use social media to amplify, right? I can turn it off. There's no dependency there. I cannot go to the gym just as I can go to the gym. Right. It's all my choice. And I feel just as good in either way because I'm making that choice. Mm-hmm. There's a want as opposed to a need. And this is what you help people with on a cognitive level, is like break it down so that they can start to compartmentalize their life and get rid of the needs and start to identify the wants. And that old Rolling Stone song, you know, you just might find that what you
you don't always get what you want, but it's what you need. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's what you need.
And that's a huge part of, you know, especially in the mindfulness stuff that we do, it's a huge part of working out of ego and understanding. And when, you know, and I've said this before, and so for those who've heard it before, I apologize if it sounds like broken record, but it's very real and it's necessary. And that's that, you know, when I talk about ego and when I work with clients in ego, it's not, you know, that urban dictionary, you know, negative connotation necessarily, because ego can be very useful in the right activities, right? And in the right understanding and the right appreciation and awareness. When it's not is when we're not completely aware and we start to identify with it. So if I identify with the fact that I'm at the gym, you know, or, you know, people say, well, who are you talking about? Oh, you know, the guy who's always, you know, buffed up, the guy who's always, you know, with the pictures online of his shirt off and no offense to those who do it, but what I'm saying is there's an unhealthy line that we cross when it starts to become who we identify with. And in mindfulness, that lack of identity of self versus identity, even of internal situations, but more importantly, external situations, is when we start to lose control and we move out of a balance of mindfulness, and we're starting to then live in either anxiety or in sort of an unhealthy relationship with goals that gets us too far beyond where we are, so that when something happens to my leg and I can no longer be at the gym for 6 months, what happens? Depression starts to sit in, you know, all of the anxiety is starting to eat me up, because it's how I've identified for so many years, right? People, other people even identify with me as that person. And so when I'm no longer that person anymore, I lose my identity, and then all sorts of negative pitfalls start, and we start getting into a very unhealthy place in our mind. And the further we get into an unhealthy place in our mind, we sow in our body, and vice versa. Right.
And that's exactly, Joe. It's because it's taken up too much of the landscape. And when that's removed, you've got this gaping hole. And the father of medicine, Hippocrates, is, you know, quoted in saying, illness or disease can only exist in the absence of health. So if we have these gaping holes, it's like having a hole in your gut, or a hole in your immune system, or a hole in your skin. Infection and illness can set in because of the absence of something healthy in its place. So when something takes up too much of you, and when that's gone, life is actually doing you a favor, because it's pathogenic. Right. Like it can overtake your system, like it did with me for exercise. And now it's got a healthy balance, because it's just taking up just enough a piece of the pie. Right. It's not about removal. Right. It's about allocation of resources that creates this balance. Right.
And that's also identity for you, because it's not your identity. Yeah. You're Neil. Right. No. And look, if we were to get super philosophical, you're not even Neil, but we won't get that deep today. But for now,
we don't have the time.
For now, let's say you're Neil. And so as Neil, you are Neil. Now, there could be 100 different things that make up Neil. Right. He could be a guy who loves craft beer. He could be a guy who, you know, loves being a dad. He could be a guy who loves exercising. He could be a guy who loves all of these things, maybe doesn't like these things as much, so on and so forth. And that all can all become an associated, right? It's like we have known each other for years. It could be parts of, you know, your associated or disassociated sort of identity, but it's not you. Right. So when you're at a networking event, or when you're somewhere else, and you don't have to introduce yourself as, you know, hey, I'm Neil, I'm the nutrition guy, I'm the fitness guy, I'm the wellness guy. You're like, hey, I'm Neil. And you're comfortable in that, and you're aware of it. And there's a level of self-compassion, self-awareness, right? Self-understanding that is rooted in that comfort that your identity is just simplistic and linear in that I am Neil. Right? Does that make sense?
I am who I am.
That's the health in that, right? So when you can get to that part, and that's what things like, you know, like that's what a narcissist takes away from us, right? They don't allow us that opportunity. And if they see that in us, they program us continually, right? And systematically control us and program us to the point where we lose that, and our identity now becomes everything that they want us to believe it is, which works to their advantage. Well, so does food. Yeah. So does, you know, so does the marketing machine telling you that a Mars bar is healthy for you. It's good for you because it's got, you know, something in it. I don't know, cocoa bean in it. So it's healthy for you. Or you could pick out 50 different foods because it's what you do, right?
Can I jump
in? Go ahead. Yes.
Can I jump in right here? But yeah, you nailed it. Well, it's our show, brother. They, like in regards to identifying, like you said it, and it's brilliant. I wasn't going to talk about it. It wasn't even in my head, but is, you know, identifying yourself. Yeah. Right? That's what a narcissist will basically rob you of your identity and implant theirs. So let me throw these identities at you. Vegan, vegetarian, paleo, keto. Like these are ideologies. These aren't who you are. Oh, I'm keto. Oh, I'm vegetarian. Right. It'd be no different than saying, oh, I'm diabetic. Right. No. You have diabetes, but you are not diabetic.
And if you believe that you're diabetic, you're never going to change that shit. Right. So you're never going to get out of that if you believe it's who you are. And that's the big part of that's probably one of my biggest pillars and likewise hurdles when I'm working with people in mindfulness specifically. Yeah. NLP is different, but when we're talking mindfulness, because it's a little bit more of a relaxed sort of Zen type of teaching, but when we're in the midst of it, it is easily probably the hardest pillar because ego identity, it's all part of that same pillar. And when we're in that, and if you are identifying as X, there is, it's so unbelievably difficult for me to help you walk away from X because the fear of losing who you are, right, is just insurmountable as compared to the fear of losing something that you experience, right? Losing something I experience happens every single day, right? Losing who I am feels like a complete death wish, right? It's a death sentence. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm done, right?
the death of yourself.
Absolutely. And
people talk about it. All kinds of psychologists talk about it in regards to, you know, the transformative death of self. Right? Two objects can occupy the same place. You got to get rid of the old. You got to let go in order to grab.
And keto is a methodology. It's not who I am, right? Or any of the others, veganism or anything. And I'm not slamming any of those, nor would I, because it's not my job. That's your job to know what's more beneficial to each and every person that you work with on a custom level. But
as you learn about them,
But so for me, I wouldn't know. But when people say to me, and I know that there are memes out there that make fun of it, that you can't talk to someone like that without it being the very first thing they say to you, It's like they come in to get their car fixed in the garage and they introduce themselves as a vegan, and not to pick on the vegans, but that's just one of the memes that you see.
Right.
And it's
– is that motor oil plant-based? Right?
Yeah, because I'm a vegan. Well, what the hell? Like, so seriously, folks, just – and listen, if you want to be – you know, practice veganism – I'm 100% behind you if it's healthy and if Neil says and whatever else. I that's not my call. What I want you to do, though, is I want you to practice it, not be it, right? Yes. Somewhere out there, there's been a guru who has told you, and they've done this in a self-serving nature. They've advertised that you have to be it because they know that for them, there's better chance that you're going to succeed and they're going to look like the hero. And I'm sorry for those of you who promote that, but that's what you're doing to people and you need to stop that shit right now.
You're forecasting or you're projecting your identity.
Absolutely.
On other people. And that's
narcissism. And it should never be an identity, right? And that's the point. No. So yes, exactly right. So practicing it versus being it, and that's in anything. I know I just jumped on veganism because you said it, but it wouldn't matter if it's if I am an auto mechanic, it's not who I am, it's one of the things I do, right?
Yeah.
And so and so have my own identity, because if there ever becomes a time when I or comes a time becomes comes a time when I can't be a mechanic,
become an English teacher,
that's clearly never going to happen. But so if there ever comes a time where you can't be a mechanic anymore, well, then again we have this sudden impact, right, that begets
loss of self.
Depression, anxiety, all sorts of things.
COVID has been a brutal wrecking ball to a lot of people who have been lulled into this false sense of security,
right?
Because I am this person, like I am a junior executive, or I am, you know, a government employee, and all of a sudden now COVID comes in and shows us how delicate that is, and then all of a sudden they're looking in the mirror and they're like, I don't recognize the person looking back at me. I've only seen them as an employee or as their physical prowess,
like
whether or not they have a six pack of abs or whether or not I can run a marathon a month or whatever, you know. I find that COVID has really rocked a lot of foundations, but it's only rocked the foundations, Joe, that are built out of stone, not the ones that are built out of bamboo, not the ones that are flexible.
Yeah.
You know, having structure is important, but having flexibility within that structure, not rigidity.
Correct.
I think we're starting to see now that, you know, there's been a lot of false idols. There's been a lot of false identities that have been molded out of this mortar and clay that is structurally non-flexible. And then when life comes in and shows you what it's capable of doing and how we need to be flexible and adaptive, it's just not there for us to do it for a lot of them. So their facades have crumbled.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an opportunity to take that a step further with you. I think that there's an opportunity to have very solid supports around that flexible foundation when we're able to adequately and responsibly identify them. So, you know, so if there are certain things, whether it's our nutrition, whether it's our fitness, whether it's our mental prowess or abilities, you know, whatever it happens to be, that we're able to set up certain very solid supports. So that's where you can bring in the concrete and the rebar and to support that, you know, the more flexible bamboo that is us, right? So when that opportunity arises, that's where you're able to, and look, put up all sorts of snow fencing or, you know, electric fencing or do whatever you want to do to keep all of the toxicity out, then that's where you're really starting to build something, right? And that's where things truly form in an element of health, right? Or wellness. And that's what I love about, like, what you do with your views on food, on nutrition, right? I've always liked how you move away from, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be three meals a day. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be five. Right. It doesn't mean that it has to be this. It doesn't mean it has to be that. It doesn't mean you can't go have your piece of pizza if you want on a Friday night with your friends. Yeah. all of those things are just all part of the, you know, the experience and what we do and what we live every day. They are the now, right? They're the experiential. Yeah. They don't become, unless we allow it mentally, they don't become who we are or part of that identity. And that's where, again, things start to go sideways. And so then the obesity happens, then the diabetes happens, then the alcoholism happens, then. And those toxic behaviors then become part of toxicity within us.
It leads to disorder, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, people don't have eating some people have eating disorders, but most of us, what we're dealing with today in the bulk of our population, I'm referring to food, but it shows, you know, to life, emotions and everything. It's disordered eating. Mm-hmm. Right? Not an eating disorder, but disordered eating. We're using things out of context. We don't see things as, you know, food is as a tool. Mm-hmm. We're mistaking the finger for the mm-hmm. moon, right? So we're eating a food and we're missing the point of why we are. Mm-hmm. We're thinking that it's the food that's the magical component, but really it's us using the food properly and applying the food properly. Right. But that's again where this toxic relationship comes from. If I have issues that are unresolved and I enter into a relationship, I could turn a very good, potentially good relationship, because nothing is good or bad. It's all potential, right? So I turn something into a toxic relationship because of my issues that are unresolved. Mm-hmm. And that's where you and I work very well collaboratively, is you go deeper and get into a lot of the issues as to, okay, well, why are you eating? Mm-hmm. What is your project? What are you looking to renovate? What do you want to build? Who are you? And delving into the ego, right? Mm-hmm. The ego is an issue only when it's someone else's idea of who it is you should be. But if you're developing your own identity and you're steadfast in that and standing strong, then the decisions you make and the relationships that you have, whether it's food or work or human interaction, becomes purposeful to your purpose, mm-hmm. not to someone else's purpose. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, or did I just talk a whole lot?
No, well, you did talk a whole lot, but it absolutely makes sense. So that's good, right? That when it works out both ways, that's really, really positive. And it absolutely makes sense. And so part of our challenge as human beings, of course, is, and it's a phrase I've never really liked because it's almost as all encompassing as everything else that I don't like. But the herd mentality type of scenario that we always talk about, right? Versus our otherwise individualistic nature, which is where we should be trying to live, right? We should be trying to live as an individual within a group, as opposed to living as part of a group, okay? And so my beliefs only, but that's how I look at things. So when I'm trying to break someone down in their belief systems that have been limiting for, you know, however many years, part of what I quite often see is that it's largely at some point or at some time, it's been largely given to society or to family or to some sort of experiences that are part of being part of something, right? Or being included or involved in something. Yeah. So whether it's, take COVID as an example, you couldn't get toilet paper. And then you couldn't, no, sorry, it was hand sanitizer first. Then you couldn't get toilet paper. And then you couldn't get flour. Well, seriously, people. Here's a question. How many of you truly loved that sourdough that you made? Like, I mean, really, like what kind of bandwagon was that? But either way, right, all of these things, and it's that herd mentality. Well, Jesus, I better get out and buy all the flour I can so that when I never make sourdough bread again, I'll have all this super stock of flour, right, or toilet paper or whatever else. The world wasn't ending, right? We have a pandemic that we're under. So when we're doing that same thing, and listen, it's a very real situation because it happens as early as childhood where we're trying to maybe have a parent that's not as attentive and we're trying to get their attention to be part of the family, or there are other siblings that we feel are getting more attention. I mean, there are very real psychological challenges with it, but it all comes back to that inclusion and or herd mentality and or social aspect of what we try to do that everyone else is doing. So whether it's, you know,
without knowing the reason.
Right. Really. Absolutely. So whether it's veganism or whether it's buying into the Lay's chips that are all the rage right now on TV, or I don't know what happens to be on TV right now. That's whatever it is. Right. And so then we also then make it part of our identity. So we get back to ego and identity. And so there are all of these things that happen that again are toxic. And so when we're open, when we're open to individuality and where we're open to understanding, you know, the customization that's very real within us, that's where we ward off toxicity, right? So that's where you can revert back to conversely say that the narcissist removes that ability for us to be individuals, right? They remove all of that by showing us that we can't, by helping us in our programming, right? And our hypnotic cues and so on, they allow us in our unconscious mind to be programmed to the point where we can't be anything without them. Well, listen, marketers want the same thing, right? They want us to understand that we can't be cool without drinking a Bud Light or something, whatever the beer of the day is that's out there right now. So, you know, or the potato chip or, you know, Papa John's or whatever.
Yeah.
So the thing is that if we have a beer or if we have a piece of pizza, right? Or if I wear a particular type of gene every once in a while, that's not a big deal. But when I start to see or allow myself to be programmed or program myself to believe that I can't be any of the things without it, that's where it starts to become toxic. And then again, no different than eating all the sugar and stuff that you deal with. It's the same thing.
I see that. Yes. And absolutely. Like in terms of the fitness industry and, you know, competitive athletes and things like that, exactly. Like it's a toxic relationship. They're losing their identity. They're being judged and they're eating a certain way to look a certain way based on what others will critique them on. And that to me is a very destructive mindset. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that fitness, these trendsetters and influencers that you see on Instagram and things like that, these people are setting a stage for other people to emulate them. And I think that at the end of the day is very dangerous because we end up emulating people that we're not necessarily supposed to be like. Like we could, at best, we can be a second rate them.
Of course.
And it leads to this toxicity because then there's animosity. And you build up animosity of oneself. I can never be like them. So you're always looking at what you can't be as opposed to focusing and honing in on what you can be and the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's that, you know, that adage of, you know, driving on a bus, for example, and you're looking out one set of windows and it's all you see is, you know, beautiful landscape and flowers. And then meanwhile, on the other set of windows, same bus, mind you, same road that you're on, you're looking out the other set of windows and you see, you know, a trash heap and, you know, all this, you know, all these other things that are there and every bit is real. But I find a toxic relationship is probably one of the most, it's the hardest thing to overcome. And I often talk about relationships and people look at me funny. They're like, aren't you talking about nutrition and fitness? I'm like, yes,
same thing.
But same thing. The relationship that we have with those, the reason why we're doing these things, the reason why we're in this relationship has got a lot to do with the choices that we make. So I hope people check out that morning mindfulness that you posted this morning. I hope they look for it. If they can't find it, I hope that they message me. But maybe, you know, there's a lot of similarities between what you and I do, Joe, and why we work so well together and why we're going to be doing a lot more podcasting together. But I just thought it was a pertinent topic to discuss today. And I feel that we are at a very exposed state where people aren't, they're not working. COVID has come in and rocked the foundation. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, you end up looking at, you know, who it is that you really are. Right. How do I reinvent myself? How do I bring myself out of this? How do I not find myself in this place again? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot of, there's a lot of introspect that can take place.
And you just set yourself up both of us for like the next three podcasts, because a couple of things that I'll say really quickly on what you just said. First and foremost, when it comes to all of this toxicity, there's a very real opportunity to be out of it. And the challenges and where we get caught in it is that largely we have a hard time with moderation. We have a lot of challenges, most of us, with self-control. And so if we don't go all in, right, if we're not at the poker table and just shove it all into the middle, we have a hard time playing light. Right. And so for a lot of us, we fall into that because, again, the marketers know, you know, the quote unquote gurus out there who are selling a particular product or service, they know that if they can show you the opportunity to be all in on it, there's a better chance that you're going to even have even a moderate element of success by going all in. So it gets them good reviews and helps them to sell more product. And that, you know, that's fine. It is what it is. As long as you're aware of it, and most people aren't, they don't take the time to be cognizant of it in the moment. Okay. So that's the first part. The second part was kind of a little bit more around in understanding, again, the toxicity of what you were saying, even about like as we reinvent ourselves, right? And that's a huge thing about trying to help people to do that. And my argument to that, and you and I have talked about this before, and I love that you get this and that you love this, but is that opportunity that we are and always have been us, right? It's all of the other things that we've allowed, again, as part of identity or as part of ego to become part of us, right? Pushed right. upon us by someone else or by ourselves, right? Or our own insecurities or inabilities or unawareness, but
so we've let it in.
We've absolutely let it in. So what I often tell people as we're talking, and you know, and we're going to look at some quote unquote reprogramming. You know, otherwise I would use the word new programming, right? If I'm going to change someone and it's going to be new programming, no, we're going to reprogram. They were always this way. They've always had this ability. They've always had the strength. They've always had this opportunity for love of self. It's just that they've allowed all these other things to come in. So as we start to remove that, and this is what you're doing, you're removing layers of weight. You're removing, you know, opportunities in those because those people weren't born that way. So look, there's, you know, there's all sorts of opportunities out there, folks. You needn't live under this guise of this is who I am and this is how I will always be.
Dependency.
Which is, I mean, dependency as much as, you know, narcissism or toxicity, it's all the same. They're all in the same camp, and it's something that we should have put on an island somewhere instead of living amongst us in society, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it manifests itself in many different shapes and forms, right. But the bones of it and the behavior of it is all the same.
You got it, brother.
And I see many people are in toxic relationships, and it's not about who's the toxic person because you know there's three sides to every story. Mm-hmm. There's yours, mine, and then there's the truth.
Right.
And here we have that moderation approach again, the balance of things.
Right.
So really, it's not about pointing fingers. Right. It's about understanding the situation as it is and making adjustments to change it, learning differently, doing differently to have different outcomes.
Yep.
And we first need to have the strength and the wherewithal and people like yourself and myself to tell people what they need to hear, not what they want to hear,
correct.
In order to get them to that place that they're uncomfortable so that they realize, you know what, I don't want to be here. Now, where do I go? And it's having that person in your corner saying, great, you're lost. You're overwhelmed. That's phenomenal because the next move you make is going to determine where you end up now. You've now changed your direction.
Right.
That is the most important, most pivotal point in anybody's transition is the fact that they halt the direction in the wrong way, that they stand there and then they take it all in. Holy shit, I'm lost.
Right.
Where do I go now?
Right.
And those are the two most important observations that anybody could ever possibly make. Because you are now able to find yourself.
Yes.
You now, by not knowing who you are, you are now allowing self to be found.
Yep.
Because
and if you want to get ready to close on one of the last toxic things that they won't want to hear, telling them things they don't want to hear, all of you listeners out there who we love, by the way, and thanks for tuning in. But here's the thing: toxic relationship with a narcissist, toxic relationship with food. Toxic relationship with, you know, ecology or environment.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to a toxic relationship that you have with self. So if you're not, and like Neil said, you can go listen to my morning moment of mindfulness from this morning that talks about this. And it was very shy. I think it was like 2 minutes and 3 seconds or something. So, but it's with self. So I encourage you to find that way back into supporting self, right? And having an awareness and a connection with and a love of self, because when you're doing that, the narcissist can't win. When you're doing that, the food can't win, right? Neil is going to be there with nutrition and fitness and be able to guide you through the positives and the opportunities, and the negative stuff can't win if you have that love of self and that awareness, right? So it truly all does. We can blame, and the blame game is all bullshit in my opinion, because it's all external. And so unless you're willing to play the kind of the Russian roulette of the blame game, I call it, which is, you know, the one bullet that's you, right? So unless you're willing to play that game and admit that you are one of those opportunities in toxicity, there's very little opportunity for change. You can still move away from the narcissist potentially if you can find the strength to, like as a person, to move away from them. But there will always be an element of you, if you're not willing to address your own self-worth and ability, right, that will still find its way back to toxicity. How many times do we see it, right? They fall for the narcissist again and again. The person who falls off the nutrition bandwagon again and again. There are all those things that, again, if there's a lack of self, that's where a lot of that creeps in from a psychology state of mind, right?
No, so, but it's and from a, you know, from a material statement, mm-hmm, too, is that they are the one consistent.
Absolutely.
So if you continuously find yourself in a toxic relationship of any manifestation, mm-hmm, then you really need to start looking at yourself in the mirror. Like, okay, if what's the one consistent? If I've dated so many people, mm-hmm, and they all ended up toxic relationships, mm-hmm, then, you know, right? Or if I've done multitudes of different types of diet disciplines, mm-hmm, and used various tools in order to become healthier, but I just can't seem to make it work, then we need to start looking in the mirror and saying, well, maybe it's not the tools I'm using. Maybe it's the way I'm using them. And maybe that comes down to me and the fact that I need to listen, mm-hmm, a little bit better to the people that know what it is that they're talking about and see this as a collaboration, and that, you know, and maybe if they see potential in me, if they believe in me, and if they see the potential for love and respect of myself, maybe I can borrow some of that from them and fill in some of these holes. And then before you know
they're
your own. You're completing yourself.
So, folks, the upside is that we've all been there and there are brighter days ahead. Trust in that.
Absolutely.
Okay, brother.
Well done, Joe. Okay. Talk to you later.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, everybody.